Chili Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Chelly.
Is this you? Is this me? I don't know. It's Friday. Anyway, and it is the 17th day of February 2023, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. And this is indeed the show that you might have been looking for. How do I know that? Because you're hearing me say what I'm saying. And if you're not looking for the show, you ain't finding it anymore. I'll tell you that. But we are being found, apparently, in a few other interesting places. Just learned this week that we're actually added to a whole bunch of new radio directories. So welcome to those of you that are actually listening to the live stream. I think some of you are not visiting the website and you're just picking this up as a radio station for some reason. And I'm going to tell you that we do live shows, and I do speak in Eastern time zone when I tell you that we're live. Right now, it is about 16 minutes after 8 p.m. in the Eastern time zone in the U.S. But a lot of you are listening in other countries now and on some streaming services that I can't even keep track of. So welcome to you. Buongiorno. Okay, greetings, guten tag, and all that good stuff. This is the O'Chelly Effect. And, yeah, if it is indeed the 17th day of February, then you're hearing us live. And when you're not hearing us live, there are replays of the shows and all that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, unless the servers go down, which happened earlier this week and is a rare occurrence. So generally speaking, we are blasting the information repeatedly, just so you know. The Jack Blood Show, the Jack Blood 360 Show, excuse me, The Age of Transitions, Uncle the Broadcast, Get Mad with Chris Graves, all these shows originate with O'Chelly.com Radio. And you'll hear them in random time slots when they are not live. Check at O'Chelly.com for your schedule. Now, for those of you who are like, why is he telling us this? It's because we have a lot of new listeners, guys, and I do appreciate your patience. But for those of you who are normally our listeners, the number to call in, 319-527-5016. That is the number to call in on a Friday night. I'll also handle some Skype calls tonight. Normally, we do this for at least 2 hours. Tonight, it will be shortened. 319-527-5016. I do not feel well, so we're shortening the show. It's that simple. But I could not resist allowing B. Pete, and would have felt very bad if I didn't let B. Pete come on and comment about a show from earlier this week. So, at least one of the shows earlier this week. Maybe he wants to comment on more, but I'm kind of certain that he wants to talk about Glenn Viklund's appearance, which took 2 hours on Monday, that I didn't intend for it to take, and I didn't take a commercial break on Monday either. 2 hours talking to Glenn Viklund. I think B. Pete might have something to say about it. So, anyway, you might too, you, the listener, that is, if you're hearing us live on the 17th day of February 2023, you can call in. Okay, just after 8 p.m. Eastern time. Yes, about almost 20 minutes after 8 p.m. Eastern time in the U.S. If that's what date it is and time it is, we're live. Otherwise, it's a replay. 319-527-5016 or charles.ocelli on Skype. And if you send me a message, I can call you into the show. Otherwise, 319-527-5016. So you could probably tell right away I'm a little slow. It is what it is. B. Pete, my co-host, is with me. And I turn over the mic to you by asking you, how you doing, B. Pete?
I'm doing good. Doing better than you, apparently. Thank goodness. Hope you get over whatever it is that's got your stomach in turmoil. But other than that, doing pretty good. But no, let's make this a shortened event tonight. Since we got things to do and you got, things to do.
Yeah, unfortunately, like, truthfully, here's what happened. Just quick recap here. I mean, it's not like just suddenly I don't feel well because I got to do the call-in show. And I was actually looking forward to your commentary about Monday's show. I don't know if you have anything to say about anything else that happened this week. I mean, we did get some pretty cool shows from Chris Graves. We got a Jack Blood 2-hour run with Maria Heller. okay, which I put out on the distribution links, but hasn't been put up on the website yet. So that's out there as well, along with a solo Mike Swanson flight on Thursday night. And, you know, oh, I talked to that Solving JFK guy on Wednesday. You know, so many possibilities. No live show from me on Tuesday. I was busy doing other things. And I recorded with the Greek again today, so I'll be putting out another one of those in the compartmentalized section that is Ocelli and the Greek Rated Y on the site by subscription only. But anyway, that is all going on, and while I was recording with the Greek, and the Greek doesn't even know this, I actually cut my mic, and suddenly I felt that strange dizzying feeling and what's the polite way? I don't know, clinically. I had to vomit. So I did that and finished my recording with him, didn't even tell him that was going on, and then I proceeded to produce Chris Graves a little while later. This all started at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I had to do that during Chris's show, too, and then in between the shows. So that's 3. I think my stomach's empty, but it's in rough shape, and I'm feeling a little tired now. So, I don't want to come on and do, you know, and fall asleep on the mic or, I mean, I could turn it over to you, B. Pete, but I don't know. I don't feel good about doing it. You're laughing. I could turn it over to you. It would be fine, you know, and I could just take a nap and set an alarm and come back when the show's supposed to be over and close it out, right?
Well, yeah, if you didn't have to handle the switchboard, we could do that. But, the logistics keep us from being able to, do that continuously and smoothly, we'll just shorten things up tonight. But, yeah, I had a few comments I wanted to make about Glenn's appearance on Monday, and then we're just going to put this thing to rest, put it to bed. It'll be out there. It'll be recorded.
Yeah.
Everybody can dice it up the way they want.
True enough. But, and look, no. I'm going to let you make your commentary, and, I mean, I pretty much said what I wanted to say that night for the most part. And, you know, he thanked me afterwards and all that. I mean, I'm not disclosing anything special. I was curious if you had anything else that was pressing, though, that maybe you wanted to get to aside from that. And obviously we're going to put aside your part 3 about Biden and China. Although I wanted to note for you, I'm betting that you didn't see the press conference. Did you see the press conference?
Excuse me, do what? Whose press conference?
Oh, that would be, Chairman Joe's press conference.
Oh, when he said, give me a break?
The reporter asked
him what was going on?
He said, I couldn't understand it all, but it sounded like he said, why don't you ask my office about that? And then proceeded to walk away. But the pertinent point here is that he said, I'll take questions after doing a press conference related to what? The objects over everybody's head, right? And then he said, well, I'll take some questions. And the first reporter was from one of those, and I don't remember which conservative outlet it is, but it's one of the newer conservative outlets, I think, who's been on him about this. He went in a roundabout sort of way and came down to, and I'm paraphrasing the question, what about a conflict of interest due to your family's ties to China with your businesses? And, of course, I immediately thought of you. And I've said over and over again this week, not only on Hell and High Water, but on my own show, that, well, you know, kind of a legitimate point to bring up. And I found it even more kind of disturbing and interesting that he picked up his stuff and did the slow Joe shuffle off the stage and did not answer the question and took no further questions. That was the end of that.
There you go.
It's not a good look. You know, again, I'm being objective here. It's not a good look. Okay.
No, it's not a good look. And the only reason that you're starting to hear more of it now is because, some of the barriers in social media have been removed so that people can start talking about this thing again. Mm-hmm. And since the election, since right before the election, when this all first came out and the news, you know, basically played it down on no big deal. You had the 50 heads, the former heads of security departments come out with a letter saying this is Russian disinformation and all, all that's coming out and shown to be that was a planned operation to suppress that deal. So now that the restrictions have been taken off and with the Republicans in charge of the House, they're starting their investigations. You're going to be hearing more and more about this, but I have been in contact. I've tried to contact John Solomon, who has done extensive reporting on this. I've sent out an email to the New York Post, who originally broke this story of all the things that were on Hunter's laptop. And I have an update on another individual, too, I've been trying to find out about. But anyway, we're going to hear more about it. John Solomon the other day on a program mentioned the fact that somebody asked him directly, you know, do we know how much money the Biden family has taken in? Because it's not just Hunter Biden. It's also Joe Biden's brother, Jim, who's been pulling some deals. In fact, one with Saudi Arabia was just in the news a couple days ago where it's come out. He brokered some secret deal where the Saudis were holding back payment, kind of like Trump had some guys do some contract work for him and didn't want to pay. So somehow Jim Biden got called in to work the deal and came to an arrangement of future $140 million contracts for this company who was shorted. Now, you know, if how they pay off the bill that they owe is by future contracts, then, you know, supposedly no money changed hands. Well, you can't believe that these people didn't get involved in this deal without getting a cut of something. What exactly is Jim Biden getting a cut of? Is he getting a cut of these future projects? As they materialize?
See, that's always the question when you see somebody traveling, right? To go, I mean, again,
exactly.
You know, cause I know some people have this attitude of, well, you won't report on Biden stuff. You jump all over Trump. I jump on what's there and what's there here, you know, pardon the pun, I guess the there is that, well, you don't make trips. You don't turn around and engage in these deals to get nothing. I mean, what is out of the goodness of his heart? No, it's just like Jared Kushner, same thing. I just decided I wanted to help the United Arab Emirates. Bullshit. Come on.
Yeah.
You know,
there's something in it for you. That's really how the game is played.
Right.
Everybody gets a cut.
It may not be cash.
So,
it may not be cash. It could be something else.
It could be a future. Well, we've got an instance where this guy in China, who later was indicted and disappeared or put in prison, one or the other, for some shady dealings, gave Biden, Hunter Biden, a three-point-something carat diamond worth like $80,000. And at the time, Hunter Biden was going through a divorce, and his soon-to-be ex-wife found out about it. And her lawyer immediately requested the judge put an injunction on him doing anything with that because technically they were married. It's a marital asset. So, you know, some of this stuff has not just come out from Hunter Biden's laptop, but also paper filed in different lawsuits all around the place, his divorce, his child support hearing. So, you know, there's more than one source for this stuff, and we're going to be hearing more of that as this stuff starts coming out. So just be prepared. But what I've done, we're still trying to come up with a total amount of money that we've seen on the hall for since Biden became vice president, and amazingly, his income has skyrocketed the minute he left the White House as vice president. He made like $16 billion between such and such year. 11 of it came the first year out of office, 2018. He pulled in $11.6 million.
Amazing how, you know how lucrative people's lives become right as they leave office, you know, as if maybe, you know,
absolutely,
something might have been. I don't know about you, BP, but if I made any significant amount of money, I usually had to do some work ahead of getting that check. You know what I mean? And, whether it was, you know, in my world, it might only been 10 grand here or something, or 5 grand there, but nonetheless, the significant amounts of money usually come after some work is done. So, you know, when you see these guys emerge from a political office, you know.
Yeah, Joe set him up a pretty good little nest at, University of Pennsylvania when he started his think tank there. I think they opened in 2018. If I'm not mistaken. And the money from China just started flowing in then. In fact, it was soon after that that the college made a request to the Department of Justice to quit hounding these Chinese individuals who were donors and things like that for intellectual property theft. I mean, there was an actual investigation going on, and somehow it suddenly got called off.
Right. And
so,
by the way,
you know, we're still trying to total up amounts, and we'll get to that on a future discussion.
Yeah.
We'll put that on hold right now until we can come up with a figure.
Right.
But In the meantime, tonight, yeah, I would like to address what took place Monday.
Right, just real quick. Glenn came on. Though, BP, just real fast, I just want to let people know I'm not holding BP back from doing that in any way, shape, or form. I mean, he decided to cut it into three parts, and it just so happens we have a delay here tonight, but we will get to it. And as BP said, you know, it would be nice to have a solid figure to work with, maybe some more information to work with to make the rest of his presentation here. And I'm not holding him back at all, okay, or trying to divert him from.
Well, now we're just just to keep you going, we're up to, just for Hunter Biden alone, we're up over, I think it's $12 million in the time, I want to say this is from the time that his father became vice president until time left office. You're looking at about $12 mil. So that doesn't even count what's been going on since he left office and what he's been pulling in. Just for an example, he was paid roughly $1 million a year by Burisma when he was on the board of the energy company in Ukraine. The minute Joe Biden left office, his money got, Hunter's money got slashed down to, I think it was $135,000 a year compared to $1 million. You know, that's a hell of a pay cut.
See, but there
simply
you go.
Because the man with the influence wasn't in that position anymore. Funny how things like that change.
Well, see, but that's one of two things that happens, right? Either while somebody's in office, somebody else gains, or when they leave office, their bank account magically expands. And how many millionaires, multi millionaires, right? What do you call it? You know, you're not a billionaire, but you got a couple of dozen million. It's got to be something, right? They're often minted immediately upon these people, you know, exiting their political office, right? Yeah. So it's like, I wonder if there was some. But I'm going to say this happens in Congress, this happens in the White House, everything. So we're going to break it down in detail, okay, on the Bidens in a future show for sure. But tonight, yeah, I do want to just get to this whole thing with Glenn, and I'm just going to shut up, sit back, and let you analyze or break down whatever it is you want to, you know, and it is what it is.
Yeah, and you know, I just want to explain up front, you know, on my end of things, since the big blow up happened, it's been some time ago, and of course that was never put out for people to hear because, you know, I agree with you, it's unpleasant to listen to. You can't listen to it. And that's the way things went down, but you know, there's some background story that some people aren't aware of that was taking place before this ever happened. And if they'll think back to the first time that Glenn and I were ever on your program together, was a night where he wanted this left-right dichotomy to discuss some things. And I think he walked away that night a little bit surprised that I wasn't the rabid right-wing conservative that, a lot of people thought that I was. Yeah, I'm conservative, right-wing. On some issues, center on a lot of stuff, maybe a little left on some things, but, you know, I'm not a Republican. I haven't been a registered Republican for a long, long time. So, you know, and when you think about that first meeting, I think he walked away a little bit surprised, and I think I opened your eyes a little bit too.
Agreed.
Some of the positions that I took on that.
No, absolutely agreed. And the other thing about that is I don't recall if you guys had maybe been on the same Myth show at some point, maybe, but I'm not sure.
I briefly was on one of the last ones that you did.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew Glenn from the research that he did and this is part of the background. Let me just take it in order. Glenn came on the scene a long time before we both showed up on this show, and he really came to the head of the JFK stuff when Judith Baker was claiming that she had been granted asylum in Sweden. And, you know, she was giving the people the impression that she was part of a process. Asylum in the EU or anywhere in Europe, like it should be in the U.S., is a process. It's a thing. And Judith was going out there, you know, saying that, you know, she had asylum in Sweden and it was because of all these death threats and things like that. And it wasn't the case. Judith had petitioned for asylum after coming to Sweden from another country. Mm-hmm. And under UN regulations, that were in place by most countries that, you know, agreed to this, whatever they signed years ago, don't know what it is, don't care. But when it comes to people immigrating from one country to another, if you're seeking asylum because of either oppression or violence or threats or government change, whatever, you normally leave your country, and the first country that you enter in leaving yours is the one that you request to seek asylum. That's the process. You can't go asylum shopping, let's put it that way. That cuts down on people going to Switzerland and applying for asylum in a country where it can be pretty easy to get in. Well, compared to other countries that make it a little hard.
And here's the thing about Switzerland. And if you don't know your geography, Switzerland, and not you, BP, but the listener, if you don't know your geography, Switzerland is landlocked by, what, four countries, right? So, you know, and Italy's one of them, I think. And the funny thing is, there are people that will try to apply for certain things in multiple nations at the same time. Now, asylum is not something that you can easily do this. I don't know if you can, you know, conceivably do it, but I know it's, the process is specifically set up so that, no, if you land in Switzerland, you're applying in Switzerland. Now, the funny part about this for context to me is that, at the same time, she was making the rounds in alt media claiming to be living in exile. This is the term she used.
Yes.
Living in exile.
Yes, and that, and, mm-hmm. Yes, and that is really, you know, of importance in the claims that she was making. She was stating that she could not live in the United States because she was under threat, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And that she was living in exile. She had been forced out of the U.S. because of things that had happened, which are dubious at best and at worst just flat out fabrications. But mm-hmm. we're not going to get into that. What Glenn was doing was trying to explain to people that Judith was part of a process of asylum, not mm-hmm. been granted anything.
Right.
She posted copies of letters that she got from the board that handles that, and they basically said, we're investigating this. We haven't been able to confirm any of these, well, not really accusations. We haven't really been able to confirm your story. And but, you know, you don't fit a political prisoner. You don't fit this. You don't fit that. And therefore, she was turned down for asylum. But technically, the first country, and I believe it was, I want to say Hungary, but I'm not sure, was a country that she showed up in over there. So eventually what she did, her son bought property in Sweden, and she was allowed to stay once he had that property there. Mm-hmm. But she was still not a citizen. So there on a tourist visa, just like when I was going to Switzerland, mm-hmm. You had to have it. If you had to be employed, you had to have insurance, blah, blah, blah. If you're there on a travel visa, you got 6 months and then you've got to leave. You could leave for a day and come back, but you could only stay 6 months continuously as a semi-resident,
right,
without having permission to do it.
Right.
And it's that way in most countries.
And while you were there,
that you go to on a tourist visa.
Right. And while you were there, you could also apply to do work in that country.
Exactly.
But you had to have a permit to be hired at a job in that country.
Yeah. You had to have and like in my case in Switzerland, I had to have a sponsor who would make sure that my pay was covered, my taxes were covered, mm-hmm. my retirement was covered. So you had to have somebody vouch for you to get to go to get a green card to work there. Mm. I say green card. That's what we have in the United States. So,
well, these are work permits of one type or another, because I had to acquire them in order to even perform as a musician in a foreign country. If I was going to be there a couple of days, play a couple of shows, an application project, process had to be started and filled out before I could take the stage, at least filled out in some places, in other places completed, in order to register myself as a foreign person who is going to collect some sort of, pay in that country for work, didn't matter what kind of work it was.
Right.
And you had to do this, and you had to, you know, there's a process. So, if you're going to be there for so many months or whatever, it's assumed you need an income or you have an income, you know, coming from somewhere. They also want to know about that. So there you go. Even if you're working, like I said, as a performer, I'm only going to be there 2 days. They still wanted these permits done. So I'm just saying there's a lot of paperwork involved here, and it's very specific. It may vary a little bit from country to country.
It varies a little bit. And now that we have the EU in place, there are certain things that agreements that these countries sign up for. Like, I'll give you an example. Switzerland is not a member of the EU, but they honor many of the EU treaties that come about. One of them was the Schengen Agreement. And this took place while I was over there. It's kind of weird. My passport shows an entry into Switzerland, but it doesn't show a departure. And that's because the Schengen Agreement was an agreement that came up between EU countries saying that we will allow travel between countries like an open border. You don't have to stop at the border and get your passport officiated every time you go through. You don't get it stamped. So the last time I went to Switzerland, it shows that I arrived at Zurich and it gets, you know, I get my stamp, the date and everything else. But leaving, they don't stamp you going out. It's like you showed up and you never left. What I would do to get over that 6 month deal was I was within like 20 minutes of the German border. So when my 6 months was coming up, I could jump over into Germany, spend a week in a hotel, come back, start another 6 months. Because the work I was doing was not being sponsored officially by a country in Switzerland. I was being paid by somebody outside of Switzerland.
By a company in Switzerland, not a country.
Right.
Yeah.
So technically I wasn't being employed in the country by someone that had to meet all those paperwork requirements. It's a long, convoluted thing. But to get back to the subject, Judith was telling people that she was granted asylum or she was in asylum process. And Glenn came out and said, no, you know, words have specific meanings.
Right.
And based on these letters, you went through the process of asylum, but you were not granted asylum. And the extensions of them letting you, because her big thing was, well, why am I still here if I've not been granted asylum? The system has a set number of days that you're supposed to go and have a hearing, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Now, that time may go a little longer, but it's only because Sweden either is catching up the backlog or they're not pushing it to the point that, okay, your day comes up, you're in court the next day. There's some lag in there.
Right.
And Swedish authorities at the time were trying to give her time to come up with information and materials to back up her claims because they couldn't find proof anywhere that she was being persecuted for anything in the U.S.
Right.
And it's hard to get asylum in another country if you live in the U.S. only because they're thinking you're in the land of opportunity and you're trying to come here. There's no political strife. The U.S. isn't under siege by another nation. You know, sorry, but you don't fit the bill. And that's what she was up against. So Glenn was pointing this out to people, and he interpreted a lot of the letters and the wording and everything else, but his big contention was words have meaning. All right, fly ahead to the Trump election. After Glenn and I had been on your show, I added him to my Facebook, and we would occasionally comment back and forth. But when Trump got elected, Glenn showed all the signs of what over here you would think would be a flaming liberal on the Democrat side. Mm. Not left-wing extremist, but someone who had the daily talking points down pat. Someone who would come up with the pat answer to something the Republican would say. And that's how Glenn, if you'll notice from his talk, and you can go back and listen to it again. I did listen to it a couple times because I didn't want to be mistaken about what he said Monday. But if you listen to him, he makes some comments in there, like when you mentioned about me being on the right side of things, and you said I was going over the Hunter Biden laptop stuff. He goes, oh yeah, right wing, Hunter Biden's laptop, not Benghazi. Okay. Glenn stereotypes people on the left and the right, and a lot of people in Europe do this because what they see are the headlines, and the headlines, you know, come from mainstream media who for the past several years have been blatantly flaming liberals on the Democrat side when it comes to coverage, when it comes to criticism, when it comes to opinion. So he sounds like a lot of typical liberal Europeans in that they will spout off the Democrat talking point because that's what you see in the news. Well, Glenn is that way. And we all heard him say on your show, he's a professional politician. Keep that in mind. When Trump was elected, a friend of his made a post. Remember the guy, Al Borelli, who passed away?
Yeah, of course. He was on the show.
He's friends with Glenn. Glenn was friends with him over the years. Anyway, he made a post about Trump's Muslim ban. Right after Trump got in office, he issued a decree stopping visitors from coming in from seven nations that were, yes, predominantly Muslim, but were on the Obama administration's list of countries to be banned because they did no checks whatsoever into people when they applied for visas or passports. You could have been mafioso number one in that country. You'd got a passport saying your name was John Smith and you were from Atlanta. You know, things like that. So that's how this came about. But the post was about the Muslim ban. And when I saw it on my Facebook, I made a comment to Glenn. I said, Glenn, you of all people know that words have meanings. This is not a Muslim ban. And I proceeded to kind of go off a little bit. Well, Glenn came back saying, well, this is a friend of mine and you've insulted me and blah, blah, blah. And I went, hey, just don't want to call you a hypocrite and have you be one. Okay. Well, he flew off, blocked me on Facebook, blah, blah, blah. So that's what the background was before he came on the night of what he calls mudslinging. I didn't sling any mud. I told him what I thought of him. He didn't like it. Tough darts. Okay, we've moved on since then. But that's what brought us to that night. Now, that night, Glenn wanted to approach this thing as a left-right dichotomy. And that's why when he made the comment about me questioning about, you know, the right side of things, it's because I don't consider myself a spokesman for the right when it comes to politics in the United States. Because I don't follow Republicans. I think they're as bad as the Democrats. So yeah, if I'm on the right side of things, it's certainly not some preset ideology put out by the Republican Party. I don't speak for Republicans. I don't speak for people on the right. I speak for myself. Plain and simple. And I don't mind calling a spade a spade. But Glenn, the first night that I was on the air with you and we started getting into talking about taxes and fuel and things of that nature, Glenn was sitting in the chat room. He says he wanted to call in, but it was, you know, too late in the show. No, it wasn't, because he sat there for quite some time. And when I brought up the amount of taxes, the tax rate in Sweden, that's when he started with this, I don't know what I'm talking about. I just pull things out of my butt, blah, blah, blah. And I'm sitting here looking at the web page where I went to three tax organizations to look at the tax rates. It's not something I made up. It's I'm doing research. As you know, I do a lot of searching while we're on the show.
Oh, yeah. Now, really quickly, I just want to enter one thing for the record here. When Glenn did start calling me on Skype, it was too late in the show. But there is a time period here where he's sitting in the chat room, and this is going on, and if he had called in when he first started engaging with you in the chat room, there was plenty of time. But
yes, that's what I meant. But
yeah, no, I just wanted to clarify that he was calling in when it was too late, and I was already tired, and I think we were, you know, like 2 minutes or 5 minutes left.
Right, and I agree with you. I don't disagree that he was trying to call in, but like I said, he's here in the room the whole time we're on the air.
Yeah.
Prior to that, he could have called, you know, he could have sent you a Skype message at any time.
Right. And that's when I said,
yeah.
And that's when I said, let's do this next week because, you know, that would be the time to do it because we're already at the end of the show. That's where that idea comes from though, is because I said, let's do this next week. Now, to my memory, and I could be wrong, the following week he forgot or something and didn't show up. And then I think the week after that one is when he actually did show up. Now, I agreed with him that it was mudslinging because, honestly, that's what it sounded like. It was the audio version of sounded like two guys just throwing insults at each other and yelling at each other because that's the way it came out. Okay.
Oh, yeah, and if that's his definition of mudslinging, that's fine. You know, to me, mudslinging is when you start making accusations about somebody that aren't true.
Well, yeah, but
you know, you're just trying to see mud, sling mud, see what'll stick to them.
Well, and
you
some know, people I've, could say that just name calling alone qualifies as mudslinging, and I kind of agree with that. That's what it sounds like for sure when you're calling names.
That's fine.
And both of you did that the way I saw it.
Well, yeah, I didn't hesitate to tell them what I thought. No. You know, and we'll get into that. But the prior show,
sure.
While this is going on in the chat room now. We were discussing things, and I've got three or four web pages up looking at gas rates and refinery capacity for Sweden. And, you know, the discussion was is that here in the United States, because gas prices were shooting up at the time. And we were discussing about the fact that the U.S. at one time had been, quote, energy independent. We still had imports, but we were able to export more to offset for those imports. And we had discussed that the refinery capacity here was limited, and that's why some things are shipped off to be, you know, refined somewhere else. And you got into the discussion of when you worked at oil company, and anyway, we went on. So it's not like we were having a discussion of things we're just pulling off the top of our heads or out of our butts. I mean, you've got work experience. I've got work experience. We've got the data figures here on the web, and we're discussing them.
Right.
So – you know, that's fine. And if he wants, so I'm trying to search, converse with you. We've got other guests and keep an eye on what's going on in the chat room. And I think like, you know, I don't have time for this stuff in the chat room.
Well, I wasn't really watching it. But
when comments, Glenn was making comments like, well, this isn't the first time I've had a beef with BP over things, or, you know, he's made some claims and I'm sitting here going, okay, wait a minute. All this stuff in the past is now suddenly coming up, and I thought that got buried a long time ago. So I thought, you weasel.
Well, also,
you want to sandbag me in the chat room, knowing full well I'm busy doing something on air, but you want to drag it out in here? Okay, let's go for it.
Well, and here's the thing about it, is the two of you were pretty much in agreement when it came to Judy and what was going on. So I'm just saying, just to note the way this went. You're in agreement.
Yeah, our last conversation when we were on the show, I thought that went quite well. I think, you know, Glenn expected to be able to debate me on some things that I just didn't hold the position that he was against.
Right.
So, you know, I thought we had a pretty good show that time we both came on there. Like I said, I think it changed his way of thinking about me, and I think it opened your eyes on a few things too.
Oh, well, over time, I sort of felt like Glenn was expressing himself with you a little bit, where it was like, you're just very much buried in the right wing, thought process. And over time, over discussions and listening, you know, I actually listened to people, I was like, well, wait a minute. No, that's not true. I could say BP leans on the right side of things. That a lot of stuff is in lockstep with the right wing stuff.
But it is.
Are you 100% there? Absolutely not. And a couple of things were sort of surprising to me. So
I will admit I can understand why people would think of a quick association with me with the right side of things, because I've taken up for the right side of things a lot of times on your show, and we've had those discussions. Right. So, you know, I don't mind taking that label, but don't say that if we're going to have a discussion, and it was after he agreed to come on the show, it was during that week. You had taken some time off, but you copied to me on Skype, I believe it was, topics that he was wanting to discuss from a left-right view of things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I told you to send back to him, hey, we got a topic, just come on the show. We'll talk about taxes and the ability for fuel and Europe's ability to handle the problem. versus ours.
Right. Now,
not this, a left-right thing. It's kind of a U.S.-Europe thing.
Right. And this is where he brought up that I hadn't, you know, well, you didn't even really approach me during that time. And I said, well, you know, Glenn, outside of when I had to coordinate a lot of people on the myth shows, I don't do a lot of, I mean, I know it's going to sound almost lazy, but it's not lazy. It's for a different reason. I don't do a ton of prep. Okay, that's not something that I do. I like it to organically emerge. Now, if you want to prepare, and if Glenn wants to prepare, that's fine by me, but I don't want to really deal with it. So I said, look, I'll pass these messages back and forth because I wasn't sure if you were blocking each other already over something else. So I said, look, I'll just give the messages from Glenn to you and vice versa. And that's all I did. And I didn't do any, like, pre-show, let's have a conversation before, or none of that, because typically I don't. It's not, it's got nothing to do with him. Typically I don't, because I'd rather.
Well, I'll give you an example. Yeah. There's not a single show that you and I have done that in any way could be labeled scripted.
No.
And I'll use Carmine Savastano as an example. When he would come on, you could tell that when you and him would discuss a certain topic, he would do a preparation. Mm-hmm. And he would read from his preparation a lot of times.
Yeah.
And it was so that he could get his points in a quick paragraph, you know, with no interruptions, and then he would get back to it. Once you guys broke off, would discuss something, he'd go back to his prepped material. That's fine. Mm-hmm. You and I just don't work that way. We would work better off the cuff. Right. And unlike you. You know, I would rather, if we're going to have a debate about something, explain your position and let me react to your position.
Right.
Because that's what the debate is about. Not about preconceived ideas that I've spent the past 3 days looking up online to try to see where you're coming from. Give me the information. I'll react to the information.
Right.
I'll give you my information. You react back. You and I have been doing that for a couple of years now. Seems to work.
No, and it does work. It does work. And he brought up, you know, that, oh, at one time, now he brought it up privately and I spilled it out and he's like, oh, I didn't mean to bring that out. And I said, no, look, there's nothing to hide here. There was a time and I talked to you personally, off air about, I'm not sure if this combination of you and me and the call in show is working. And I told you that. And you said, look, I won't even have any hard feelings if you don't want to do it anymore. And I said, well, let's see if we can, you know, do something different. And we batted a bunch of ideas back and forth and have sort of settled back into a different, you know, sort of a different idea about how we want to go forward. And that's what we've done. But there was a certain point where it's like, it's no secret and not like I'm going to get rid of B. Pete. It was just like,
oh yeah,
maybe this isn't working and maybe we'll do something else or stop doing it. I was upfront with you about that. It's not like that.
Oh, absolutely. And that's been the one thing about Friday nights that I like. I mean, you and I started doing this on Wednesday nights, I think it was. We moved it to Friday.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to see how it would go. I am probably the most honored individual in the world in that I get to spend Friday night on the air with you. And we've discussed a lot of topics. We have wasted a lot of time just lip flapping about nothing,
mm-hmm.
but it's a chance to get out there, spend a night with you and other individuals. We've got a regular group that calls in. It's a pretty good group. We can discuss usually any topic
mm-hmm.
from the most mundane to the most silly, you know, so, you know, it's not something that we need to mess with, and it's never been any pressure. There's never been I've told you all along, if you don't think this is working, dump it. Do something else. And if I can be of any help in any way, I'd be glad to do it. If all I did was sit here, research links and throw them to you in message during a show to give you material to work off of, that'd be fine with me.
Mm-hmm.
But we're able to get out here, discuss our opinions, maybe open somebody's eyes about something. It's great. Now, Glenn had been a guest with you before on multiple occasions.
Right.
I personally didn't have anything against Glenn until he pulled this move on Facebook, and I thought, you know, that's a little underhanded in that you blast me in this long paragraph about Americans, and I never should have trusted anybody, but it's got a fake name, and blah, 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 and then immediately blocked me to where I couldn't respond.
Mm-hmm.
And that, yeah, that pissed me off. I thought, okay, here's the opportunity for us. And when I see this stuff come back up in the chat room about our first encounter, I thought, okay, he blocked me on Facebook. Now he wants to talk about it in the chat room. And I'm sure nobody has an idea what he's talking about when he said he had problems with me in the past. Mm-hmm. Nobody knew what that was.
Well, also a miscommunication here quite often is that a lot of people think that, you know, to do a show like this, you have to be confrontational too.
Yeah.
That's like a guarantee. Well, confront him, call him out, confront him. This ain't Jerry Springer. Okay.
Exactly. And looking at the list of things that Glenn wanted to talk about, you know, it was kind of, and he was looking for that confrontational left versus right.
Exactly. But
supportive
not,
things. And he was, and I thought, yeah. Dude, you're not going to get that from me because I don't parrot the Republicans' view of things. You know, Republican in Europe and a lot of people is a dirty word only because of the press coverage that they've gotten. By the time things get done here and work their way through the media filter over there, when you say Republican, people automatically think fascist, Nazi, et cetera, et cetera. I used to get in this argument all the time with the kids of my girlfriend in Switzerland, mm-hmm. and their idea of politics and what the left, right, and right dichotomy meant, because it's all stereotypical. And Glenn was playing into those stereotypes when he'd come up with these topics he wanted to discuss, and that's fine. Well, but I thought, yeah. You know, here's one instance where Glenn and I had a misunderstanding because I held him to his own standard when it comes to calling things what they actually are. Hmm. And the crap about the Trump Muslim ban, I'll go ahead and tell you right now if you haven't figured it out, folks, Glenn Viklin is a rabid anti-Trumper, no matter what. Being in the position that he is as a professional politician, I guess he figures his opinion of American politics is important because they affect what goes on in Europe so greatly. Let me go ahead and tell you, folks, I've been to Europe. I've lived in Europe. They don't give a damn what Americans think. If it doesn't cost them a buck or somehow cut into them making a buck, they couldn't care less what U.S. thinks politically.
Well,
trust me.
I think
they have their own politics that they're worried about.
Yeah, well,
they have their next door neighbor who's undercutting them when it comes to Eurozone trading regulations than worrying about what the U.S. is going to do because they love our money.
Well, and let's
love the fact.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead.
Well, and let's invite the listener to, you know, take a little, a temperature of their own of themselves, right? Really ask yourselves, do you give a crap about what Swedish people think about, you know, you and what goes on here? Mostly no, you don't, because you're concerned about your stuff. And I don't expect them. I mean, like, I could give, I mean, look, I know I got a little bit of a grudge with the French, but pick another European country or European-adjacent country. I say what I say. You know, one that you're not ethnically connected to, okay, that you don't have any sort of heritage connection to. I give you another example. Do I really care at all about British politics? Not much. I got to tell you, British politics, why should that affect me? I don't, it's
You're
not
right.
of interest to me.
I'm the same way. I don't care what the Brits do in Parliament. I really couldn't give a crap.
Well,
but when they start mandating things over there through their political process, you can sure bet it's not long before it gets thrown into the political lexicon over here and people start pointing fingers. Oh, look at their socialized medical system. Yeah, look at it. People are waiting months and weeks to see doctors and things like that. So do you really want to dive into that?
Well, I don't want to.
That's in Britain.
Yeah, look, I don't want to.
This is the U.S.
Exactly. And I don't want to dive into any of these debates, okay, right now.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you and I might disagree on that a little, but let's just leave it alone.
Yes, and I'm sure there are a few things that I might open your eyes on when it comes to that. But
sure.
Anyway.
Spain?
We're dealing with European politics and the U.S. politics. And Glenn has a tendency to stereotype me wanting to throw me on the right and thinks that I can defend any Republican or right side argument that happens to come up about economics or armies, invasions, world politics. Okay, fine. If he wants to discuss world politics, we'll do it. I'm going to do it from my perspective, not from what I think the U.S. should do, blah, 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 because
I'll
be honest with you, I'm realistic enough to know that my opinions don't mean squat anywhere.
Well, that's the thing.
Okay?
I don't expect anybody to really care about what my opinions on their politics are. over there so much either, but look, it does have an effect. It is something to observe. It does count in the geopolitical sense, but bottom line, at the end of the day, is it really your main concern? Is it something you're going to focus on? Not really. But again, I don't want to devolve into any of these things because it's not the important point. I mean, they may indeed have a totally different definition of liberal over there too.
Absolutely.
Because I've observed a couple of times somebody who's described as a liberal politician over there. Not only doesn't it bear any resemblance to what philosophically I would think is a liberal, but then as sometimes liberals as described over there don't bear any resemblance to the liberals here. It's a different term.
Yeah. You take into consideration that in Europe, these countries used to be territories, used to be kingdoms, you know, their evolution of government is a lot different than ours in that we were able to start new in this country. Forget all the history. Forget all the, you stole land from it. When we're talking to straight politics, politics in Europe has evolved over thousands of years. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, there are places in Europe, many places still standing that were built long before we ever considered being settled in the 1700s. Mm-hmm. You know, when you go to a building over there and you look at it and the date above the door mantle is 1192, you know, those folks have been around for a while.
Right.
You know, and that's where their politics has evolved from. And they're welcome to their system. There's some unique systems over there that you and I have discussed in the past and we'll probably discuss in the future. But getting back to the topic at hand, Glenn wanted us to be able to sit down and discuss things. And I guess he figured, you know, it could be a regular thing that we could take the topics from the left and the right and make it like an old, firing line episode.
Oh, yeah, sure,
forget all that.
No, I'm not that host, and secondly,
it makes for boring, for boring listening sometimes when you're talking about the minutia of U.S. politics versus European.
Glenn was
operating in that realm that, you know, here I was, this righty that he could take on. And knowing the background now, when we came into that show, one, I'm thinking, okay, the first issue we had a long time ago over something as ridiculous as Trump's quote Muslim ban and the way he reacted then to start hitting me up, I felt he blindsided me in the chat room while you and I were trying to hold a conversation on air and then not showing up when he was supposed to and then finally wanting to get into it that next week. I said, okay, we already have a topic. We don't need a topic. Forget all the stuff he said. Just we're going to continue on. So we start that show.
Right.
And I know how bad it is on Skype. Well, I'll give you an example. Remember back in the first days of Yahoo chat and things like that, you'd get in a chat room. Everybody's on a mic. Mm-hmm. You're trying to get control of the mic to respond to something that somebody said a few minutes ago. Mm-hmm. You know, the guy with the biggest power computer and the closest location to the server is going to be able to steal the mic every time. Sometimes trying to do multiple people on here, there's lag built in. There's other things. A lot of times, if you'll notice, during the second half of our show, when we got a lot of people on the air, there's a lot of times I'll go 25, 30 minutes. You won't hear me say anything. And it's because I'm not trying to get in and steal a conversation, jump in the middle of a conversation, because a lot of times I'll go, excuse me, or wait a minute, and I just get talked over and you don't hear it. Mm-hmm. And that's not your fault. And that's something I want to bring up specifically. Mm-hmm. Glenn said that he felt there were some things you could have done that night that would have alleviated the situation. And I have to disagree with that. I don't think you did anything wrong in that here's two grown guys that know each other, have a past, have been on the show before, wanting to discuss things. I'm going to let them discuss it.
Yeah.
And that was the premise that you set up, and that was the premise that we followed under. But unfortunately, in this instance, I let Glenn have his say.
Right.
I didn't try to interrupt him. I let him go until you two were done discussing things. And then the first opportunity I get to speak on the subject, I'm not two sentences in and I got Glenn sitting there trying to interrupt me or trying to talk over me. And it pissed me off to no end. I try to be polite on here in that not trying to walk over people. Another example was a few weeks ago when Jimmy James and I were discussing something. And now Jimmy's got a serious lag anytime he responds to anything.
Right.
And so if he says something, you go to respond or you ask him a question, you don't take the lag into consideration. You might be asking him another question before he ever answers the first one, and it becomes a jumbled mess.
Yeah, he's on the line right now. He's on the line right now, by the way. And I granted, Glenn, that I probably could have taken some actions, though, to change the situation. But and I feel like, yeah, a different kind of host from myself, one who is accustomed to this, should have had that in place and been able to manage it. But again, I don't choose to do the confrontational format. That's not right. What I do. And yes, because of the way Skype works, it is difficult. Now I can reach over and I could say mute you during and if I had to, I would. But again, the premise that you just laid out is exactly what was in my mind. Two grown men are going to talk to each other. I'm pretty much going to set up and step away and let them have a conversation. And it did not work. Now, I'm not criticizing either one of you. It just...
No, it didn't work. I agree with you. It didn't work. And let me say just this. It didn't work on my part in that, one, I got angry when I got stepped on trying to get my point across. Mm-hmm. We had a discussion about it. Glenn shut up. I could continue on. I didn't get much further into what I had to say before he's trying to talk over me again. And then I got ballistic.
Yeah.
And I went off. And I'll admit it. Yes, I went off. Glenn acted, and what really set me off the most of anything was after the second interruption, when I made a comment about what was done in the chat room the week before.
Mm-hmm.
Glenn played stupid. Like, he didn't have a damn idea what I was talking about. And in that opportunity, I scroll back, because your chat room keeps whatever's been typed in it as an ongoing scroll.
Right.
Luckily, I could scroll back far enough to the week before, or 2 weeks before, find what was written in there, and I started pointing it out to him, and he denied it. And that's when I just blew off.
Right. Now look.
And yes, I called him some names.
Yep.
And he gave me the opportunity to apologize, and no, to this day, I'm not going to apologize what I said to him or how I said it. Mm-hmm. He pissed me off. I let him know it right off the bat. I called him a weasel. I called him a hypocrite. I think I may even call him a liar.
Well, fair enough.
At that time, he was.
Well, fair enough.
But that's based on what was happening at the time.
But here's my point I want to make here is, what was I to do in that circumstance? Exactly. I mean, what I did, which is I pulled all of us off air and I said, look, this is not working out too well. All right. I again, as a listener, I don't really care if the two of you are hostile with each other or, you want to be buddies. It doesn't matter to me, in the role that I am in at that moment, which is I'm running the show. Okay. And I'm listening to this going, this is unlistenable. This sounds terrible.
And I don't fault you for that at all. I really don't. And when I say there was nothing you could have done, you could have handled the outburst between me and Glenn differently, but that's neither bad nor good. It's just, it is.
And
you know, what took place took place.
Yeah,
you could have hit a mute button. You could have jumped in and said, folks, this is not going to work. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to discuss something totally different. Well, you know, you could have done that. You didn't, but whether it's bad or good, it's irrelevant.
But
it is what it is.
Right, and no matter what action I took, by the way, it could have ended up the same way, where even if I broke in that first 15 minutes and said, no, we're going to break, then I would have had to have the conversation with both of you, and even if I got you both to agree, okay, no, I'm going to be calm, I'm going to wait, you know, look, we're going to do this with a stopwatch, two minutes, it wouldn't have mattered what agreement I made during that break. I turned the mics back on. The same thing could have happened. It just, so I said during the break, look, do you guys want to just, you know, what do you want to do here? Do you want to, I was offering openly, which way do you want to go with this? And Glenn was like, I don't want to do this. I said, okay. but I'm not kicking you off. If you don't want to, that's fine. No. You can go, and B. Pete and I will finish the show.
And he's mentioned that people got a hold of him offline, some people to listen to the show. He's had some friends of his ask, you know, what went on. You know, I just want to say to anybody listener who's going to listen to this at a later date, you know, Chuck did what Chuck did on his show. It's not a question of right or wrong. There's no way Chuck could have said anything that would have calmed me down based on the actions of Glenn Viklund. And my reaction was based on Glenn Viklund, not Chuck, like I said, I'm the most thankful person in the world to be able to spend time on here and have a platform to at least get my ideas out. But I in no way hold Chuck responsible for anything that took place on that show, because the only way he could have gotten me to shut up was to kick me off the show. I was pissed. Yeah. And I didn't care if the world knew it. I still don't care if they know it.
No,
and to this day, I am not going to apologize for what I said to Glenn Viklund. Now, I told Chuck, I'm sorry that, you know, this became a show that wasn't even, you know, postable in another format. You know, I hate that we wasted a Friday night on that. Right. For that, I feel bad. Yeah. Did I let it get me down? Did I let it bother me? No. Because Chuck and I have had our differences on this show.
Yeah, right.
You know, that's not something Chuck is probably one of the best friends I've got that I never met through being able to discuss anything. And I mean anything, and value his opinion. I value his position because it does give me a different aspect on things, not some manufactured crap that somebody's trying to get you to believe something else.
Right.
Chuck is one of the most honest people I have met from get-go. So all due respect, you know, I appreciate him letting me come on this show. I hate that I ruined a show for him. I really do.
Okay, but it wasn't that big of a deal. It's just, to me, I wanted
And it's not been a big deal since. You and I have, occasionally I've asked you, have you heard from Glenn? You know, because I've even suggested getting him on the show so that you could discuss some things. Sweden suddenly wanting to join NATO.
Right.
No-go zones in Switzerland. The immigration issue. You know, there's a lot of things that you could discuss with him on what's going on over there that I would be no part of.
Right.
So there's no animosity on my part towards Glenn Viklund.
Okay.
He mentioned the respect thing. Yes. I did lose respect for him over that. I lost respect for him when he pulled the stunt on Facebook. And then we pulled the stunt in the chat room and then on the show. Yes, I've lost respect for him. I don't wish him any real harm. I don't wish for him to be not on this show. Glenn brings an interesting perspective to things, being in a part of Europe that is not necessarily the part of Europe you always hear about.
Right. So it's a unique perspective from somebody who is actually involved, which is, you know, valuable. And I won't say no that it's not. Regardless of whether I agree with Glenn or not, I would still want to hear from him.
There is one thing I want to point out, though.
Okay. But we've had Jimmy James on the line for quite a while, though. I just want to get to him. And also, we're not going to go too long on the show, so I do want to give him some space if he wants to talk too. Because that's my default position, by the way, is always, even though I interrupt people and some people yell at me about it and everything else, I always try and grant the other person the opportunity to respond, to make their point, to say what it is they want to say. How I want to respond to it, sometimes it varies. But I always try to make sure that everybody who appears here, whether they're a caller or a co-host or whatever, has the opportunity to speak their mind. I don't try to shut anybody down.
I've never heard you... Even for some of the most weird positions, I've never heard you talk down to anyone or tell them, like me, you're batshit crazy. I've never heard you be disrespectful to anyone or their opinion. You may not agree with it, but I've never heard you talk down to them because of their position. Or have you take an attitude of, you know, this isn't even worth discussing. Well, you're very respectful when it comes to your guests, and that for that you should be applauded.
Well, I make that effort, but in fairness, I did start to lose my temper a little bit with Glenn toward the end of that Monday night show.
Let me point something out that happened on that show that I find, to me, it's just confirmation of what I thought in the beginning. You know, when he wanted to make a comment about a Muslim ban on Facebook, and I'm saying, hey, words have meanings, remember? Mm-hmm. You of all people. Well, he kind of did the same thing to you when you were discussing the fact that he had changed what he was doing in the way of giving you money. And he made, you know, the comment to you that, well, you asked me what was wrong. You didn't ask me why I had changed my decision to give money to certain things.
No,
that's two different questions.
Yeah, specifically I said, are you mad at me?
Right.
And he said, you know, that's what you asked me. I said, well, I want to know what was wrong, because generally that is the explanation when somebody changes or
absolutely
cancels.
Nine times out of ten, if somebody's going to quit giving you supporting something that you've been doing, it's because you made them angry over something.
Yeah, I made them angry.
It happens in business all the time.
And I ask them, what did I make you angry with? I always want to know, you know, just so for my head, what is it that turned you from I want to support you to not? And usually,
right,
nine times out of ten, easily, if not more, you pissed me off because.
Right.
Okay. So
and it's a natural response, and it's a natural thing that happens to you. But notice that he points out to you that had you asked him about the money, that's a different question than are you mad at me? And I agree with him. Yes, if you want to talk semantics, there are two different questions.
Okay.
But how much of this animosity that I've heard from him could be because of something I said or something I asked and him taking it a different way?
Mm-hmm.
I know now that you have to be careful in what you say to Glenn, in that him being a professional politician, he's going to react a certain way. And he's already got the, but you didn't ask that, you asked this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, yeah, I did, but most people understand why I asked you, are you mad at me? It's like his mind compartmentalizes the two different things.
Mm-hmm.
Are you mad at me? Well, no, we never had that discussion. I'm not mad at you. Have I ever said I've been mad at you? Well, why would you even think I was mad at you? Well, because you moved your money. Oh, well, see, that's two different things.
No, and here's okay. The thing. There was no, like, animosity, because what was suggested in the email is that perhaps this had something to do with why I sort of set him up. And I'm like, no, not over $5, which is,
folks,
you know,
trust me, folks, there was no setup. I don't know if a setup's ever been on the Ocelli Effect, plain and simple.
I've never tried
I've
to
suggested
ambush
a couple setups. I would love to set up Judy Berry Baker and get her on.
Well, look, I've gone along with that idea, but I have never attempted, even when it sounded like maybe I did, like, you know, like I brought up the Fetzer thing where it sounds like, you know, maybe we set him up. Nobody set him up.
Now, I mean, look, you know, there's this whole thing came about organically between me and Glenn.
Right.
And as far as I'm concerned, it was over the night I told him exactly what I thought of him.
Well,
you know, I could be a part of a conversation discussing another topic that he were discussing, but I would respectfully demur from doing that because I wouldn't want to put anybody in a position where something might happen because of something he says and me getting pissed off over it.
Yeah,
but I got nothing against Glenn Beicklin. And like I said, you know, he's been on the show. He should still be a part of the show. I've suggested several topics for him to come on and discuss with Chuck, because I think he makes an interesting guest, and he brings along a perspective that we're not used to. So now you know the history behind the blow up. You know, from my perspective, why I blew up. And no, I'm not going to apologize, but yes, I'm going to apologize to Chuck, because that's one episode he couldn't do anything with, and it's a waste of time. And Chuck's time is valuable. So I apologize for wasting Chuck's time that night.
Well,
and I'm sincere when I say that. And Chuck, I think Chuck understands I'm sincere when I say that.
Oh yeah.
Based on the conversations we've had since then.
No, absolutely. And I didn't ask for apologies, by the way. I was
exactly
just kind of like, look, this is the way this happened. That was that. So I want.
But I will say this,
mm-hmm,
and only in reaction to a comment that's in the chat room, and it was towards the end of your program, Glenn wouldn't, and here's the quote, Glenn wouldn't actually answer any of Chuck's questions, concerning the pandemic injection agenda. He would only toss out unfounded conventionalities. Mm-hmm. That show, while I was typing in the room, I was actually pulling stuff off of websites about rates. And when Chuck got off the air, I Skyped him later and said, I don't know that Glenn wants to have that debate because here's the numbers I just crunched. Mm-hmm. If Glenn wants to come on and discuss the success of worldwide vaccines and wants to discuss what we're finding out now about them, I'm willing to take him on because I got enough ammo. He's going to be backtracking the whole time. It will confuse him based on the numbers that I've pulled and the numbers I've crunched. Mm. You know, so yes, I'm willing to debate Glenn Viklund on anything, but it's going to have to stay on topic because I keep in mind how he's done me in the past. Twice I felt like he undercut me. I don't trust him to not do it the third time, but he's a professional politician. So, and you know how I feel about those.
Well, and fair enough. I mean, that's the way it is. So I do want to get to Jimmy James though, cause he's been waiting on the line for quite a long time. And, again, I'm always happy to, give somebody the space. So I'm going to do that. One last thing though, just about the words part of it as I go to let Jimmy James on is that, you're on the air, Jimmy James. Just give me a second. One last thing here is that, you know, he brought that thing up and I said, well, at the same time, I was a little bit irritated with the idea that you thought it was a charitable donation because you said my charitable donations need to be redirected, which it was like, okay, so now I'm a charity to you. Am I a charity or are you supporting something? There's a difference here between I'm somebody who is in need of help, which indeed sometimes I am. But either I'm a charity and you're doing it because, you know, that is your purpose, or, you know, you're actually reimbursing me for something that you're getting for free in your way.
Exactly.
And there is a difference between those two things. And I said, you know, I could have gotten offended at that. And in my own head, I did for a minute, but I didn't take that up with him even. You know, it was just that I was pointing out that if you say, well, my charitable donations, that implies that I'm a charitable donation. And if that's the way you view it, look, that's not what I'm here for. I think that you're giving me some value because I'm providing you with some value. That is different than, you know, I want to help the needy or I want to help the sick or, you know, it's a different thing in my mind. So maybe I'm wrong about that, but that's the way I took it. And, I wasn't even mad about him moving the money. I just wanted to know why, because it's always good to know what it is that causes, you know, some support to disappear. And sometimes it's a political position. Sometimes it's a personal issue. You never know.
Yeah.
And
you don't know if you don't ask.
Right.
And you attempted it in a way that most people would. Hey, you mad at me? Well, why would you think that? Well, you know, stop sending your money. Oh, well, that's a different thing.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to support of this show, every time I end this show, I try to make a note to tell people to support the Ocelli Effect. It's worth supporting.
Mm-hmm.
It's been on long enough that people, for the things that people waste their money on, you know, a few bucks here and there adds up. As people have seen in different venues, whether it's somebody's fundraiser, whatever, a little bit adds up over time. And, you know, when I send money to the Ocelli Effect, it's not because I think it's a charitable thing or anything else. It's, hey, I can spare this month. Let me do this because I feel like this needs to be out there for people to have that option.
Hmm.
And that's, you know, it's you support the things you believe in. I believe in the Ocelli Effect. It's an informative venue of media for people to go out there and take advantage of, use it to the best of their ability, or just sit back and have a laugh, or if nothing else, get you emotionally involved enough to say, that dumbass, I can't believe he just said it. Hey, at least we got something out of you, you know?
But that's it.
So
you get something out of it, so you get something into it, you know?
Exactly.
But that's different than, you know, I'm trying to feed the hungry, or I'm trying to help the sick kids. You know, I'm just saying.
Right.
All right. So, Jimmy James, I appreciate your patience, man. I'm sorry you were so long on hold there, but I was trying to allow BP to totally finish his thoughts. My apologies for keeping you on hold. Anything that you want to enter, though, by all means, go ahead.
Evening, Jimmy. Breaking news. BP, do you know who Kelly Pickler is? Some country singer?
Oh, yeah. I think she's a North Carolina girl.
All right. Well, her husband just killed him, so.
No,
breaking
really?
News.
Wow.
Seriously. Damn.
Yep.
She was on American Idol. Was one of the winners, and that launched her careers. And she has a huge following.
Yeah, I got to admit, Chuck, I don't know that one, yeah.
Chuck, I have to air my grievance to you for not allowing me to air my grievance to Glenn Viklund when he was on.
Wait a minute. How did I prevent you from airing your grievance? I'm sorry. How did I do that?
You know very well I wanted to confront him on reparations.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jimmy. I was not aware of that, actually. It was not in my mind. I do not know it very well. I could probably think back and recall that maybe you wanted to talk about that, but I don't. I did not have it in my mind that night. I actually thought I was only going to go about an hour with Glenn that night, but I ended up with two. My apologies if I kept you from doing something. Perhaps we can arrange that. For that in the future.
Indeed. And as he's an official from the Kingdom of Sweden and good King Gustav, well, listen up, buddy. You owe me 2 acres and a mule.
Okay. I was not aware of this. I am unprepared to respond to this. I have no response or...
I want my reparations. I want my reparations. I'm 82% from the British Isles, and somehow I got 8% Sweded.
All righty.
You look only to the Vikings for the guilty party. I want my reparations.
Some great-great-great-grandma or grandpa must have been a Swede. That's all there is to it, huh?
Yes, my dear ancestor was a nun, when suddenly some Viking hordes, smelly buggers, came and violated her. Unacceptable.
Okay. I will not wage any disagreement with you about this. I have no idea.
Since this is becoming a race/cultural thing, I'll slip Jimmy James Ben Crump's phone number. He just got hired by a Raleigh group here whose kid got tased, had heart problems, ended up dying from the cops. So I'm sure Ben can fit you in his tight schedule, but we'll see if that'll help Jimmy get his reparations.
I don't think so. Jimmy James...
Hey, it's worth a shot.
Well, it's worth a shot, sure, anything is, but to my knowledge, Jimmy James would not qualify for Ben Crump's services, though, you know?
No, I think he's willing to handle the oppressed of any color.
It is just my opinion, but based on pattern recognition, Jimmy James, I think you may be not have the complexion for the connection here.
He might be off the spectrum chart.
Just thinking. But, I mean, like, I could be wrong, obviously. Pass him along the number. I mean, you know.
Does he carry – hey, Jimmy, do you get a tan in the summer?
Oh, I could get tan.
I can see him at the tanning booth next week. Do me all over.
Fair enough. I mean, and as a...
Hey, I want everything. Everything that Judy Baker was denied, I want. I want the passport to Sweden, I want my acre, and I want a mule.
Okay, hey, you know, if it wasn't for the fact that the FBI had opened up my file, I might look for the right of return to Italy too, to be honest with you.
Everything Judith Baker was denied, so I guess a torrid love relationship with Oswald's on that list too, huh?
Well, she wasn't denied
that. That's right, dig him up. Dig the man up.
brings a whole new meaning to Jimmy James is taking on a stiff.
Wow, taking on a stiff.
Dig him up.
That's a t-shirt. We're dig him up. Dig him up.
Dig him up.
Why am I thinking of that Kellogg's frog and dig him? Okay, all right. I don't know. Things are getting strange now. Jimmy James, I support your pursuit of reparations. I just want you to know, my brother. By
well,
all
don't
means.
You get out of hand there, Mr. Roman Empire. We have some talking to discuss, too.
Well, but here's the problem. Really, the Kingdom of Sicily, so perhaps you don't want to have that discussion due to the fact that, you know, previous to that time and post
okay,
that time.
Fair enough. We need to find an Italian guy because he's the original source of the whole damned problems.
It is highly likely that you are correct. that's all I'm going to say, but... the Kingdom of Sicily, quite frankly, was invaded by many different cultures. So, you know, we could spin the wheel of ethnicities as to who I could seek reparations from, perhaps. You know, just saying. And that would likely include all of your ancestry. So I'm just saying this could be more than a singular direction this conversation will have to flow in.
Well, are you saying Britain at some point conquered Sicily? Never mind. I never said nothing.
Not conquered, but yeah. So everybody landed on
that's
Sicily.
That's a complicated idea of a lawsuit with Sweden. All right, never mind about Rome.
I think you might want to stipulate that we'll leave that out of the case.
Well, you could just name him as an unindicted co-conspirator.
Well, that's true. That always works too.
Yeah. Give us a little bit of bad press. That's
fair,
all.
Fair enough. Look, gentlemen, if there's anything else you want to enter, I am of the feeling that it's time for me to hang it up for the night. So that's what I'm going to do after I allow each of you a final word, since Jimmy James is our lone caller tonight, and we did spend the time. I mean, BP, you expressed yourself fully about this Glenn Vicklin incident, right?
Oh, yeah. I think I got it. I mean, I don't think there's anything more else to cover. My side of it and where we stand now. So we're good.
Fair enough. So, Jimmy James, is there anything that you'd like to put in here as a parting sentiment?
Well, Glenn, you're a good guy. But you and your people owe me.
There you go. Straight to the point. And that's what I like, according to that commercial I run from Uncle every once in a while about the Ocelli.com radio network. Okay, so, B. Pete, you know, I'm trying to laugh, I'm trying to smile, but I'm not feeling so hot, so not like I wouldn't let you have the final word on the show tonight anyway. But with that in mind, I definitely give you all the time you want to throw in your final sentiments here, sir.
Well, I'm just glad for the opportunity to be able to clear the air and give somebody a little background as to what happened, you know, prior to the mudslinging incident. So, everybody out there, you know, we'll pick this up next week. We'll get back to our regular hootenanny of fun and, go from there. In the meantime, go to Ocelli.com, hit the donate button. Anything you can do, do it. Other than that, I'll hand it back to you, Chuck, and say looking forward to seeing you next Friday. And thank you, Jimmy James, for calling in.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jimmy James, and thanks to all of you for listening. Now, anybody who does throw something in there tonight, I'll tell you, it'll go towards some Alka-Seltzer to start with, because that's where the first money that comes in is going. But after that, you know, it is appreciated, because after all, I am merely Ocelli, and every last one of you is indeed the effect. Good night.